Oppenheimer once observed that it is easy, as history has shown, for even wise men not to know what Bohr was talking about. Like Bohr, Oppenheimer was never simple or straightforward. At Los Alamos, the two men sometimes seemed to be mimicking each other. Bohr at Los Alamos was marvelous, Oppenheimer later wrote. He took a very lively technical interest, but his real function, I think, for almost all of us, was not the technical one. Instead, Bohr came, most secretly of all, as Oppenheimer explained, to advance a political cause, the case for openness in science as well as international relations, the only hope to forestall a post-war nuclear arms race. This was a message Oppenheimer was ready to hear. For nearly 2 years, he had been preoccupied with complex administrative responsibilities. As the months rolled by, he was becoming less and less a theoretical physicist and more a science administrator. This transformation had to be intellectually stifling for him. So when Bohr showed up on the mesa speaking in deeply philosophical terms about the project's implications for humanity, Oppenheimer felt rejuvenated. He assured Groves that Bohr's presence had greatly helped morale. Up until then, Oppenheimer later wrote, the work often looks so macabre. Bohr soon made the enterprise seem hopeful when many were not free of misgiving. He spoke contemptuously of Hitler and underscored the role scientists could play in his defeat. His own high hope that the outcome would be good, that the objectivity, the cooperation of the sciences would play a helpful part, we all wanted to believe.
Victor Weisskopf recalled Bohr telling him that this bomb may be a terrible thing, but it might also be the great hope.
Early that spring, Bohr attempted to put his concerns on paper, drafting and redrafting a memorandum and then sharing it with Oppenheimer. By April 2, 1944, he had a draft that contained several basic insights. No matter how things ultimately worked out, Bohr argued, it is already evident that we are presented with one of the greatest triumphs of science and technique, destined deeply to influence the future of mankind. In the very near term, a weapon of an unparalleled power is being created which will completely change all future conditions of warfare. That was the good news. The bad news was equally clear and prophetic. Unless, indeed, some agreement about the control of the use of the new active materials can be obtained in due time, any temporary advantage, however great, may be outweighed by a perpetual menace to human security. In Bohr's mind, the atomic bomb was already a fact, and control over this menace to humanity required a new approach to the problem of international relationship. In the coming atomic era, humanity would not be safe unless secrecy was banished. The open world Bohr imagined was not a utopian dream. This new world already existed in the multinational communities of science. In a very pragmatic sense, Bohr believed that laboratories in Copenhagen, Cavendish, and elsewhere were practical models for this new world. International control of atomic energy was only possible in an open world based on the values of science. For Bohr, it was the communitarian culture of scientific inquiry that produced progress, rationality, and even peace. Knowledge is itself the basis of civilization, he wrote. But any widening of the borders of our knowledge imposes an increased responsibility on individuals and nations through the possibilities it gives for shaping the conditions of human life. It followed that in the post-war world, each nation had to feel confident that no potential enemy was stockpiling atomic weapons. That would only be possible in an open world, where international inspectors had full access to any military and industrial complexes and full information about new scientific discoveries. Finally, Bohr concluded that such a sweeping new regime of international control could be inaugurated after the war only by promptly inviting the Soviet Union's participation in post-war atomic energy planning, before the bomb was a reality and before the war was over. A post-war nuclear arms race could be prevented, Bohr believed, if Stalin was informed of the existence of the Manhattan Project and assured that it posed no threat to the Soviet Union. An early agreement among the wartime allies for the post-war international control of atomic energy was the only alternative to a nuclear-armed world. Oppenheimer agreed. Indeed, he had shocked his security officers the previous August when he told Colonel Pash that he would feel friendly to the idea of the president informing the Russians about the bomb project. It was easy to see the effect Bohr had on Oppenheimer.
He knew Bohr from way back, and they were pretty close personally, said Weisskopf.
Bohr was the one who really discussed these political and ethical problems with Oppenheimer, and probably that was the time, early 1944, when he began to think seriously about it. One afternoon that winter, Oppenheimer and David Hawkins were walking Bohr back to his guest quarters in Fuller Lodge when Bohr playfully insisted on testing the thickness of the ice on Ashley Pond. The usually daring Oppenheimer afterwards turned to Hawkins and exclaimed, "My God, suppose he should slip! Suppose he should fall through! What would we all do then?" The very next day, Oppenheimer beckoned Hawkins into his office, pulled a folder from his secure file cabinet, and let him read a letter Bohr had written to Franklin Roosevelt. Oppie obviously set great store by the precious document. According to Hawkins, the implication was that Roosevelt had fully understood, and this was a great source of joy and optimism. It's interesting. We all lived under this illusion, you see, for the rest of the time at Los Alamos, that Roosevelt had understood.